Kathy, now I have to say your name. Obradovich has been reporting on government and politics in Iowa for more than 25 years. As political columnist for the Des Moines Register, she covers presidential politics, Iowa congressional delegation, and state and the State House. Her columns and breaking news coverage appear on the Register opinion page, DesMoinesRegister.com, and social media. She is a regular reporter on the Iowa Public Television, Iowa Press, and frequent guest on other state, national, and international news programs. She's also on the faculty of the Iowa State University Greenlee School of Journalism. Okay, some people are probably familiar with that. And Greenlee School of Journalism and Communication. From 2003 to 2009, Kathy was political editor at the Register and lead editor of the nationally recognized Iowa Poll. Previously, she was reporter, editor, and State House bureau chief for the Lee Enterprises newspapers in Iowa. Kathy is a native, Iowa native, and graduate of Iowa State University. Please help me welcome Kathy Obradovich.
Thank you. It's great to be back here. I recall from the last couple times I've spoken to this group that you always have a lot of questions. So I'm going to keep my remarks fairly short, and please be thinking about questions that you might have about just what just went down here. And also, if you have questions about the Des Moines Register and what we do there, I don't know all the answers, but I'll do my best. So. I gather from some of the comments this morning that I've heard already that Tuesday was not a fulfilling experience for all of you. So let's just start off by talking about what the hell happened. Okay? I could call this my WTF talk, but we're in polite company, so. So let's start with the positive, okay, positive thinking, right? Democrats kept the Iowa Senate. That is extremely important for a lot of issues in Iowa. Mike Gronstahl has been a bulwark for some of the more right-wing Republican ideas that have come out of the Iowa House. And we will have more of that because the Iowa House did add Republican seats in this election, but the Iowa House stays 26 Democrats, 24 Republicans, and with presumably Mike Gronstahl will be reelected as the majority leader. So, this is not a big surprise, even though it was what turned out to be a pretty red wave type of year. Republicans dominated every other office. But in Iowa, because of our nonpartisan redistricting, only half the seats are up in the Senate every 2 years. And the way it works, it actually benefits Democrats right now. The seats that are up during the midterm elections, which right now, presumably the midterm elections, because the Democrats are in the White House, midterm elections are going to be better for Republicans no matter what. The seats that are up in the Iowa Senate are actually the seats that Democrats are going to have an easier time holding. So had the seats that were up 2 years ago in the Iowa Senate been up this year instead, we'd probably have 30 Republicans in the Iowa Senate right now. So be grateful for Iowa's nonpartisan redistricting, because that is a big reason why we still have divided government at the State House. A couple of things to think about for about 2014 as you look into 2016. The big losses, of course, U.S. Senate, the congressional races, especially here in the 3rd District, and the those are the two big ones, and then, of course, the governor's race. I would argue that most of those races were not about issues, per se. This was not, generally speaking, a repudiation of a lot of the issues that Democrats have been talking about. When we, Des Moines Register's poll that came out in October before the election said that Bruce Braley had a majority of likely voters of either party behind him on issues like the minimum wage. Well, it was about split on minimum wage, but the plurality, 50%, was with Bruce Braley. A lot of the social issues were on Bruce Braley's side. People want abortion to remain legal in Iowa and not restricted to just a very rare circumstance. People in Iowa, while still split, are generally in favor of keeping gay marriage legal. So some of those social issues are things that Iowa voters still support, regardless of having voted Republican. I think that this was more of a problem of the Democratic bench and not having enough candidates, or at least the right candidates. Bruce Braley seemed like the natural candidate to replace Tom Harkin. He stood up right away. Nobody else challenged him. I think that he would have been a better candidate if he'd had to win a primary. He would have had to do a dry run of his organization, get his name out statewide. I think that Democrats made a mistake by not challenging him at all in the primary. Same with Jack Hatch. Jack Hatch, while it was always going to be an uphill battle with Jack Hatch running against Terry Branstad, always going to be an uphill battle. But Jack Hatch didn't have to go through a primary because the other candidates dropped out. I think that he would have benefited, and the ticket would have benefited from having somebody else run in that primary. Stacey Apple, same way. She was brave enough. I mean, you gotta applaud her courage. She was brave enough to stand up and say she was going to run against Tom Latham, even though initially she didn't want to. But she said she would. And then all of a sudden Tom Latham says he's going to retire and it's an open seat. And Democrats, I think, to honor perhaps her courage and also acknowledge the fact that she had a big boatload of money from Emily's List and some other organizations, decided not to challenge her. And again, I think in particular in the debates, I thought she could have used a dry run in a primary and some debates in the primary. She was not a good candidate when it came to public speaking, in especially in a debate situation. She needed more seasoning. So those are some things. You know, it wasn't a widespread repudiation of the Democratic agenda. I think that there were some flaws in the candidates. And when you look to 2016, and the great thing about Iowa is that the pendulum is going to swing back, right? I would expect, especially now, with a lot of Republican control, Republicans controlling both houses in Congress, having three out of the four congressional districts in Iowa, that they're going to have to show some results, right? They're going to have to govern. And we'll see whether they're ready to govern or not, or if it's still going to be about just stymieing President Obama. But that is something that they have to get over, is the idea of getting something done. And if they don't, and I think this will happen anyway, but especially if they don't govern, the pendulum will swing back toward Democrats in 2016. Of course, Iowa is going to be the bottom, ground zero for that. We started the 2016 presidential campaign a year ago, at least a year ago, with potential presidential candidates crawling all over the state. And that was another advantage for Republicans, to be honest. There were a lot more potential Republican presidential wannabes running around Iowa and talking about the Republican agenda and getting into the newspaper and raising money for Republican candidates. That's one reason why we have Rod Blum as the new congressman up in the 1st District, I think, is he was able to get Chris Christie, he was able to get Rand Paul. Other presidential candidates, potential presidential candidates, came and campaigned for him and made him look like a viable candidate. So we've got already people who have put down stakes in Iowa. On the Democratic side, of course, because Hillary Clinton has pretty much frozen the field, we didn't have as much of that on the Democratic side. In the final weeks of the campaign, Joe Biden was here, Michelle Obama was here twice. The first time was kind of a mulligan, you know, because she didn't get Bruce Braley's name right 7 times. You know, she came back. It was great. The second one was fine, and she did what she could. Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton both here twice, once for the Hark and Steak Fry, and then separately for Bruce Braley. I was at both the Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton events. Bill Clinton was fantastic. Hillary was a crowd pleaser. I think she still needs to. I think she needs to warm up to Iowa. She is a good advocate for the issues, but she doesn't really yet act like she wants to be here. She will be opposed. There will be someone opposing her in Iowa. There's no such thing as a coronation in the Iowa caucuses. And there are going to be some candidates who would appeal to the most progressive wing of the Democratic Party. And we don't talk too much about party factions in the Democratic Party, but they do exist. And they've just not been as visible as they've been in the Republican Party, in part because the caucuses haven't been contested, weren't contested in 2012. Those factions tend to come out during caucus time as people push for candidates who might represent, there are going to be some candidates who run at Hillary from the left, and particularly on issues of war. I've talked to a lot of Democrats in Iowa who think that Hillary Clinton is too hawkish. Also, climate change, feel like she hasn't done enough on climate change. And also Wall Street, feel like she's too close to Wall Street. So there will be some candidates, and I've talked to a few of them. Martin O'Malley's been out here several times. He sent staff to Iowa to help Iowa candidates. It looks like he's probably gearing up to run. There's been a few others who may or may not run. One of the more interesting ones is Bernie Sanders, a U.S. senator from Vermont, and he's actually an independent. He's been to Iowa a couple times. He's met with the Citizens for Community Improvement, which would be probably the embodiment of the really left wing of the Democratic Party in Iowa, and he. I got to go and interview him in Washington, D.C. in his office on his birthday in September. And so he's got to decide whether he's going to be a Democrat or not, because he's not going to run in the Iowa caucuses if he's not a Democrat. But he would, I think, represent probably a lot of the progressive values that, you know, somebody who is countering Hillary Clinton might bring to the table. So 2016, you know, you look at that, I think the pendulum does swing back. A lot of times in a presidential year, the party that's out of power in the state house will gain ground again. We won't have Terry Branstad on the ballot. Terry Branstad, by the fact that he did not have a really competitive challenger in Jack Hatch, was able to do a lot of mischief in other races. He had it sewn up before October, and that gave him the freedom to run around the state and get help for Rod Blum in the 1st congressional district. Branson was very involved in that. He spent a lot of time helping out Joni Ernst, traveling with her, and giving her his support at every single turn. And you know, he won every county in Iowa except one, and of course you all know which one, right? Johnson County. So that was a big impact on the ticket. In 2016, Terry Branson will not be on the ticket. So I think I'm going to pause here and just see what questions you have to start off with. I found that I never ever learn anything by hearing myself talk, but I always learn a lot from your questions. Yes?
The lesson that we learned by not having somebody in the runoff election to give them practice and whatnot, would that be a lesson learned that we may carry forward as the same problem with Hillary, even though she's well practiced, well rehearsed? Versus when she ran against Barack, they were all over.
Iowa gives candidates a workout. I don't know if you heard the question. You know, will we face peril if Hillary doesn't have a primary or a serious primary challenge? Iowa tends to give candidates a workout, and if she has some sort of any challenger that gets any attention at all, she will be expected to engage with people. And so, you know, will there be Democratic debates, for example? I hope so, because I think that that will make her a better candidate. Iowa tends to make candidates better. If you look at, pull up a Republican example, Rick Perry. He had problems in 2012 that had nothing to do with coming in late, but the fact is he did come in late. And he missed a lot of that campaign in Iowa where candidates are honing their message, are meeting people face-to-face, are answering their questions, are standing up at every rubber chicken dinner in the state, and going through that issue of, you know, having to have the stamina to get through all of that. And he suffered from it. You know, he gets up then in a national debate on national TV and he can't remember the three things that he wants to get rid of in the federal government. He shouldn't have to think about that. And I think part of the reason why he came in late or was because of his back surgery. He was in pain or on drugs in 2012. If you see him today, pain drugs for his back. If you see him today, he's a different candidate, and he has already been in Iowa multiple times, and he is learning the things that he should have learned before he got into the race in 2012. There's a reason why candidates who have run before in Iowa tend to do better. Mitt Romney. He got surprised in Iowa in 2008, and he applied those lessons in 2012, was much better candidate for the Iowa caucuses in 2012. And it was the reason why he was able to basically split the difference with Rick Santorum, who of course appealed to the grassroots evangelical wing of the party. So people do get better, and I do think that Democrats should not be afraid to shop around in 2016 and say, they may end up with Hillary Clinton at the end, but let's hear what some of the others have to say, because I think it will make Hillary better for it. Yes.
I was curious about Citizens United and the amount of money that was spent this year, and the ads that seem to have a lot of disinformation or misinformation, and it would be, I think, good if the Register would not just say, do your fact check, but say, this ad was 50% right, or this was 30% right,
yeah,
or this was 80% correct.
Yeah, so Citizens United and all of the negative and false ads. Iowa, of course, a record was spent on advertising in Iowa between the candidates who spent about $20 million and the outside groups that spent about $60 million. There was, you couldn't turn on the TV, obviously, without seeing an ad. And I would submit, just as Rick just did, every single ad was false to some degree. Even the ads that were positive were false to some degree. What these ads tend to lack is context. So they may give you a grain of truth, and by truth I mean a fact that is a verifiable fact, And then they surround it with innuendo, negative assertions about the motive of the candidate, etc. So all of these ads are basically false. And media fact-checking has been a cottage industry. In 2012, I believe it was 2012, that PolitiFact, which is a Florida operation, online fact-checking, political fact-checking organization, won a Pulitzer Prize for fact-checking. Here's the problem. People do not believe the media fact-checking if it contradicts their own candidate, right? People will be all about the media fact-checking that says that the other guy is wrong. And they will share it on Facebook, and they'll be like, that jerk, he's wrong. And when their own candidate is getting a pants on fire, which is what PolitiFact uses for a totally false ad, they say, oh, the media, what do they know? Okay. The Des Moines Register is, we just reorganized our newsroom, and part of what we did was we added some positions to our political team. One of those is a what we call a reality check reporter, an experienced political reporter whose entire job will be to check facts, political statements. And so that will be in place for the 2016 election. But I'm challenging you folks, if you don't like lies in advertising, the only way that will stop in the foreseeable future is if people hold their own candidates accountable. It does no good if me as a reporter says, you know, Bruce Braley, that ad that says that Joni Ernst wants to blow up the world, whatever, was 40% incorrect. It's got to be Bruce Braley's supporters saying, get that ad off the air. It's not doing you a service. Because they'll listen to their own people. Now, of course, they have no control over the ads that were paid for by Tom Steyer from NextGen Corporation or from the Koch brothers on Joni Ernst's side. They have no control over that. And that's where people need to be lobbying their Congress members to do something about Citizens United. There is going to be probably a need for a constitutional amendment sometime in the future. But in the meantime, they could at least do something about disclosure. The secret donors that are allowed to stay secret when they contribute to those super PACs, that really does harm to the democracy because with PACs, regular PACs, you know, the old PACs that we've always had, those now look like clean government, right? Because we know every dime that gets contributed. We know where it came from, every dime. And we can look at those and say, oh, you know, so-and-so, this group that's advertising against the candidate, look who contributed, right? With these super PACs, we can't do that. That really does undermine democracy. You know, it's not a free speech issue. It may be a free speech issue that Supreme Court says it's a Supreme Court issue that these folks be allowed to contribute and advertise and contribute with no limits. But it is not a free speech issue that says that those people get to be secret and that we can't see who's paying for these advertisements. That's a congressional issue, and they can and should take care of that. There's my little soapbox. Yes?
I haven't read anything about the percentage of voters in the project.
The percentage of voters. I can't tell you the number, but I can tell you it looked like it was not quite a record. It looked like 2010. It was pretty close to 2010. What was a record was the absentee balloting, a record early vote in Iowa. And that is something to consider for 2016 as well, because all of a sudden Republicans got the early ballot They came very close to Democrats' early vote. They have historically resisted the idea of voting early. They'd like to go on election day, and that put them at a disadvantage because they had to spend the money and the get out the vote effort on people who were going to vote for sure anyway. They suddenly realized that this would allow them to focus on people who were potentially iffy votes. So, and they're not going to forget that in 2016, which means that Democrats are going to have to innovate more and go the extra mile to keep that advantage for early voting. Yes?
I wonder how much of an impact the fact that both Democrats ran away from the president.
How much of an impact was it that most Democrats ran away from the president? I think that the real impact was that independents who voted for the president ran away from him. The core Democratic Party voted for Democrats. There's no doubt about that. But independents, the swing votes, turned away from the president. And two basic reasons for that. People will say it's the economy, but the fact is in Iowa, the economy is good, right? And the economy nationally is improving. Reason one is Obamacare. That still remains very unpopular in Iowa and unpopular with independents. Now, it remains true that a lot of the things that Obamacare does are popular. People like the idea of covering pre-existing conditions. They like the idea of young people getting to stay on their parents' insurance at age 26. They like some of the other parts of Obamacare. And when you poll about those individually, they'll be like, yeah. But when you ask about Obamacare itself, they think about the big government and the cost. That's what they think about. So that is something that the next Congress is going to have to figure out is how to, because they're not going to repeal Obamacare, not while Obama's in the White House. We've got two years where there's a potential, if they decide to do so, of Congress to work together to try and fix some of the things that nobody likes about Obamacare. So we'll see if that happens. Did I answer your question? Yeah, pretty much. Okay.
You mentioned other candidates. What do you think the chances of Elizabeth Warren running?
What are the chances of Elizabeth Warren running? So she did come to Iowa. She campaigned for Bruce Braley, had two rallies with him. I was at the one that she was, she did in Des Moines, and she was fantastic, honestly. I wrote that she, of all the surrogates that I saw for candidates of either party this cycle, that she was the best at firing up the group. Now, does she make the best presidential candidate if she runs? That's about more than a good stump speech. So we'll see. And will she run? She has been saying no, 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 no. Whether that becomes maybe and yes at some point, I don't know. I think she probably will not run if Hillary Clinton does. But suppose something happens and Hillary Clinton starts to look vulnerable, beatable, then we might see some people reconsidering those no's. Yes.
Do you think there is a path, whether he wins the Iowa caucus or not, do you think there's a path for Rand Paul to become the nominee?
Is there a path for Rand Paul to become the nominee? Possibly. Rand Paul is an interesting candidate, and he is not his father's libertarian. He has been wisely, I think, working to reach out to other coalitions in the Republican Party. The problem with that, though, is that as soon as you start to reach to one corner of the Republican Party, the other corner goes, and yanks you back or forsakes you. And in Iowa, you have to have at least two of the three coalitions to win the caucuses. You have to either have the evangelicals and the libertarians, or the libertarians and the mainstream Republicans, or the evangelicals and the mainstream. You have to have part of those three coalitions. Nobody wins with just one. Rand Paul's challenge is to move beyond his dad's libertarian coalition without really alienating the other two parts of the party. So it's a tightrope, yeah.
We talked about Joni Ernst not being the registered editorial board, and whether or not, now that she got away with it by winning and not doing that, will that be something that happens again?
Will it happen again? Well, so Joni Ernst isn't the first. I know it may have sounded that way, but she's not the first candidate not to meet with the Register's editorial board. I think it was short-sighted on her part in the sense that the Register's editorial board, while fairly predictable, surprises people on occasion. They did, and I think I talked to you folks about this after 2012, when the Register's editorial board out of the blue endorsed Mitt Romney, and everyone was so shocked by that. So that is, occasionally they can be capricious, and there's always a chance that a Republican could get an endorsement. But I think that what her campaign advisors were telling her was that the risk that she was going to come in and say something that would be disastrous for her campaign was too great, was greater than the potential for reward of the endorsement. So you know, I understand that. It is a debate situation is actually less scary, believe it or not, with the opponent standing there, than an editorial board where you've got seven or eight people asking you questions, and there's no time limits for the answer, and there's no they can keep asking and asking and asking without moving on. So that is a high risk environment for a candidate. I think that in the future, a lot of candidates are still going to want to have an opportunity to have their say before an editorial board, and run through their message. Joni Ernst did get the endorsement in the primary, by the way, from the Register. So, and if they don't, we'll find other ways to vet them. That's just all there is. So, yeah.
I just wonder if you think Jack Hatton will run again.
No. That's not an easy no. So Jack Hatch, he's basically said he's done in politics, and he said that even before the loss on Tuesday. I don't expect him to be back running for anything. I would guess that he could be up for. First of all, he's got a good job. I mean, it's not like he needs the money. And second of all, as a real estate developer. But second of all, I think he'll keep his hand in public policy through boards and appointments and other things that he can do. Will Terry Branstad run again in 2018. I don't think so, but it's possible. I mean, first of all, he will not lame duck himself by saying he's not going to run. I think he'll keep that to the last possible minute, even as other people are starting to prepare. He's made no secret of the fact that he's grooming Lieutenant Governor Kim Reynolds to run. The question I usually get asked is, will he bail out early and let her run as an incumbent? And I don't think so for two reasons. One, in the first gubernatorial debate at the fairgrounds, I asked him straight out, if you are reelected, will you serve all 4 years of your term? And he said yes. So for him to bail out early, he would have to, first of all, go back on that word. And that may not be enough for a politician, to lay book on that. But the other part is he just absolutely loves being governor, loves it. I don't think he gives it up 1 second before he has to. Does that preclude some sort of cataclysmic health event that would force him out or something like that? No, but I do think that he doesn't give it up voluntarily for any reason. So.
I want to ask about that. So do we celebrate here in Iowa that the media doesn't ask about his Parkinson's, or doesn't ask Joni Ernst about her marriage infidelity issues, or her spokesperson having OWI, or, you know, David Young being, well, what the hell's with those glasses? You've got to be kidding. Do we celebrate that our media doesn't ask that? Or do we go, you guys are asleep?
So first of all, the media did ask about the governor's health and asked repeatedly. He was asked on statewide public television. He's been asked in other public forums, and he has blanket said he's fine, he's healthy. Now, how would you propose that we suggest that he's not healthy without any proof? Without his cooperation. And it was up to Jack Hatch to decide not to try to put pressure on him to release his medical records. Jack Hatch did not ever say a word about the governor's health. How do we as the media harp on that without it just being blatantly politically biased? Joni Ernst's marriage, David Young's sexuality, do you really think that voters should care about that? Should voters care whether David Young, who's not married, I don't want to know, honestly. I don't care. I just don't care. And Joni Ernst's marriage, again, I think that politics is already too far into the, personal destruction, and way too far away from the issues that people care about. Joni Ernst's marriage is not going to change how she votes on the budget. It's not going to change how she votes on the farm bill. I just would rather. I don't write the news stories in the Register. I can write what I want based on my opinion about the candidates. But I just don't. I don't like to see people being dragged through the mud because of their personal lives, especially because I think that discourages good people from wanting to run for office. Yeah.
Along the same lines, if I can ask this question, do you personally know any negative information about the next election, Hillary, anything that would surprise us? Because we kind of get shocked with this concept of attack ads. So is there anything in the future that we as a group might?
Well, so Hillary Clinton has been through a campaign. You've pretty much seen all of her dirty laundry at one time or another. You may not remember it, and you might be surprised when you see it again, and you will during this campaign. But here's the thing. The media is not a gatekeeper anymore. It used to be that when I was sitting at my desk and I would get a press release from a candidate over the fax machine, and I could look at that and say, oh, this is crap, and wad it up and throw it away. And you all would never see it because I chose not to report it. Now, the campaigns have already put up that press release on their web pages. They've made a web video. It's all over your social media. Chances are you've seen it before I have seen it. And so now my role isn't to say, you guys, I'm not going to bother you with this because it's not worth the fax paper that it's printed on. Instead, my role is to say, this is, stand up and say, this is crap and here's why. And most of you who have already shared it on social media will completely ignore me. So, yeah.
Being the spokesperson for the Register right now, now that the vote has come in and but the devil incarnate is now in the Senate, how much backpedaling do you think we as gay Iowans have to backpedal, on are we going to be able to marry? Are we going to be able to have insurance? And how much backpedaling, now that she's there, are we going to have to do? Or nothing?
So
I think we're going to have to cover our butts.
Here's the thing. GLBT issues were nowhere in this campaign. No one talked about them. And I think part of the reason for that is that most mainstream Republicans have acknowledged that that is a loser issue for them. That it is law in Iowa. Most people have accepted that it is law in Iowa. If there were a vote up today to change the Constitution, I don't think it would pass. I really don't. That's different. You know, if it had come up in 2010, it would have been a whole different story. But now, I think it's established law. And because of the Supreme Court's action, it's established law in the majority of the states in the union. I think it is going to be very, very difficult to roll back, and I don't expect the U.S. Congress to lead the charge there. Now, will we still see arguments over justices and judges, and some of those issues that are really being established in the courts? That's where the battleground is. And so, you know, hope that your favorite members of the Supreme Court, you pray for their health, because if they go off the court, it's likely that they'll be replaced by somebody who's much more conservative. So. I think we're running out of time. I'll just take one more here.
Well, first of all, I want to compliment you on your writing, because the Bloody Mary is just brilliant.
Oh, thank you.
Very good. Second of all, it appears now that Branstad is going to join Grassley and King as really being Teflon coated, that they're just really unbeatable in any and all ways. Any sense of how we can ever penetrate that? Do they actually have no policy, or is there just nothing there?
Well, so are Branstad and Grassley and King, are they all Teflon coated? Well, so King, no, because Iowa does have nonpartisan redistricting. It's possible. He was in the 2010 redistricting. He was actually thrown in with Tom Latham. One of them could have knocked each other off if Latham hadn't chosen to move to the 3rd district and take on Leonard Boswell. So incumbents are not sacrosanct in Iowa, but the statewide incumbents are very hard to get rid of. I would submit that despite all appearances to the contrary, that Chuck Grassley will not live forever. he may not retire, but I'm guessing that at some point he will no longer be alive in the U.S. Congress. So that seat is going to eventually come up. And the same is true of Terry Branstad. I mean, I think that despite the fact that he loves being governor, I'd be very surprised if he ran for another term. His wife has been very understanding up until now, and because she hates politics. So I think that, of course, getting him out of the House may have come into the idea. But on the other hand, Barbara Grassley loves politics and loves Washington, and she is not going to push him to retire. So, but it will happen eventually. And again, going back to my earlier comments, Democrats need to have a bench ready for these opportunities. And those people who bypassed taking on Stacey Apple, for example, I'm sure they're kicking themselves today, because that was a winnable race. I think with a stronger candidate, it would have been a different story. So, all right, thank you.